Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, for many Congolese women, the civil war that's raged for more than a decade in the Democratic Republic of Congo is deeply personal. The war claims on average 1,000 lives every day. That's bad enough, but thousands more are the victims of rape. And many of these women develop a crippling fistula condition that brings physical pain as well as social shame. Lynn Lucy and her husband Joe have dedicated their lives to rebuilding the broken lives of such Congolese women. Lynn is the program manager of an organization called Heal Africa. It's based in Goma. And she joins us now. Lynn, welcome to Australia. Welcome to Open House.
Thank you.
Interesting accent that I heard before we went to air there.
I'm originally from the south of England, so there's a little difference between me and you.
Yes, there's a fair bit of difference between you and the people that you serve, because you've been in now in the Democratic Republic of the Congo for how many years?
I first went out there in 71. There we speak French, so they sent me there because I studied French at uni.
37 years later, wow. Mm. What first took you out there then? I mean, you said you were sent out because you knew French, but why did you first make the decision to go out to the Congo?
After uni, I volunteered to the Baptist Missionary Society for short-term service as a teacher. And they sent me to the very western part of Democratic Republic of Congo. It was during that time that I met my husband and ended up finally in Goma, which is a big town, very, very close to the Rwanda border.
Mm. How much did you know about Africa before you left?
Pretty well nothing, yeah. I had, in fact, been very interested in mission in Congo when we heard a missionary talk at our church when I was probably around six. Really quite surprising when you look back 50 years later. This is the way God's led me.
Leaving picturesque Britain to then go to the Democratic Republic of Congo. When you first arrived, when you first set foot on soil, what was your response?
Wow, that was a shock. Yes, I thought, this is a big mistake. How can I get back in the plane? there was no chance. So fortunately, the school where I was working is out in the rural area. And I don't think I would have stood the horrors of Kinshasa, busy, noisy, filthy, dirty. Anyway, I was working out in a very rural school, and I really enjoyed it very much.
Hmm. So tell me now about this hospital that you and your husband Joe run. It's right next to a volcano.
Right next to the volcano, that means 17 kilometers away from the volcano. Yes, we're on the edge of one of the big lakes of the Rift Valley, the Western Rift Valley. These are the big lakes that fill up the huge rift that breaks Africa apart. So Kivu is one of them, one of the deepest lakes in the world. And right behind, 17 kilometers away, there's the volcano Nyiragongo. And that was the volcano that erupted in January 2002.
And destroyed your hospital, didn't it?
We had been working 2 years in this new hospital. Yes, so everything we had done from 2000 to 2002 was wiped out that day.
Well, let's talk about the hospital, and then I want to get to where it's at now, a few years after that that tragedy. So tell me, what do you do? How did you start the hospital? At what point did you and Joe realize this is what we need to do? We need to build this hospital here.
Yes, because we've been working since 74 in church medical work. And over those 20 years, you see the missionaries who used to come for a whole lifetime to work in rural hospitals, there were fewer and fewer of them. They would go back home. Nowadays, it's very, very rare to see a missionary doctor who comes for a lifetime like they used to. My husband says they're an endangered species. Mm. The World Wildlife Fund needs to pay attention.
That's the next campaign for them, hey?
Endangered medical missionaries in Congo, right? There are no more. And it's reasonable to say that because nowadays the Congo is producing doctors. Why can't we find the Christian young Congolese doctors who have a commitment to serve their country? And who are willing to go out to the rural areas. It's not impossible to find them. So we decided in 1995, that this was the way we wanted to go forward. We wanted to be focusing on those doctors who are prepared to go and serve their country in the rural areas. How to give them the proper training, that's the challenge that we have now. How to prepare them to go into the rural areas with the skills they need, when they have so few resources. and how to prepare them also spiritually, because we want people to have a total approach to health, not just the broken arm. There are the social problems that bring these problems to them. There are the spiritual problems that come with them. Mm. And God's idea of health is health for the whole person,
yes,
not just the body. And to be able to do that properly, give them the best possible training with good mentors, it became evident that we'd need to start a hospital specifically for that. Mm. And that's what Heal Africa is for.
And before the volcano eruption and the destruction of the hospital, how big was it? How many patients were you seeing? How many doctors were you training?
At that time, we had 3 doctors in training, 2 specialists, and 25 beds.
Mm-hmm. And have you been able to get back to that stage since?
It's just amazing what we have now. We have 155 beds. We have 6 specialists. We have 12 doctors in training. So really, this is such a lesson to me that God can take the worst catastrophe, he turns it right around, and he uses it to do what he wants to do.
Beautiful story. Mm-hmm. Lynn Lucy is our guest on Open House. We'll podcast this via the website, theopenhouse.net.au. Lynn and her husband Joe have run this hospital. It's kind of risen from the ashes, really.
A phoenix, right?
A phoenix, absolutely. Now, let's talk about what you really focus on, which is these Congolese women who are the victims of horrific injustice. Tell me a little bit about the situation. Tell me a little bit about how they are being used in the war that's been raging over in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
This war has been going on now for 16 years. The violence really started just after the government declared that we're going for democracy. So it started back in 91. To this day, it's never finished. There are so many excuses for this war. It depends what part of the country you're in, what particular mine they're holding on to. These warlords have different excuses. Underlying it all, it's a question of who controls the mineral resources of that particular area. In the north, the Ugandans are after the gold and the hardwoods. In our area, it's the diamonds, the tantalite, castorite. Further down, cobalt, all sorts of things that are easy to transport, very high value items. So people are looking to control an area. The central government has no control because they're down in Kinshasa, these vast areas of tropical jungle between, no roads, no communication. And the warlords hold the areas. Now, if you want to make sure that nobody comes in and tries to impose any authority, you have to actually terrorize the population. And one of the most effective ways that's been used since the Old Testament times, since in every war, is to use rape to terrorize women. The men are killed. The boys are taken into the militia. Villages are burned. Everything is destroyed. But particularly when the women are the backbone of the economy, they're the ones who produce the food for the families.
Okay.
Then if they're afraid to go to the fields, if they're afraid to go to the river to get water, then you have effectively destroyed the economy of the region.
You can see the evil genius behind it, can't you? The strategy.
It's a strategy that works. I wouldn't even think that they think it out like that. Mm. It's just a strategy that works. Mm. For the women of this region, for the families of this region, it's an ongoing catastrophe. It's impossible to put a stop to it from within the country. And that's the purpose of this film, Lumo, that we're showing around Australia. The purpose is to raise awareness amongst concerned people across the world so that they will influence their government and put pressure on their government to wake up and say, oh, we didn't know there was a war there. What can we do about it?
That's right. How many people actually know of the war that's going on?
How many people know? Very, very few. Amongst your listeners today, I'm sure very few people even know that there's a war in Congo.
Yes. So here we've got this strategy being used, this rape against these women. And I hate to go into the details, but they actually are raped so severely at times that they develop what's called this fistula condition. Can you explain that in general
terms? This is
terms?
Something that's happened to probably 1 in 10 of the women who've been raped. It's hard from numbers to understand the extent of this horror because we are just one organization dealing with one small area of the country. We can't deal with all of the provinces on the east of the country from Sudan down to Zambia. That's the extent of the eastern border of the country. All of this area has suffered rape against women. In our particular area where we are responsible, We have helped over 11,000 women who have been victims of rape in these 4 years.
You alone?
Our organization alone. And of these, maybe 1 in 10 has had to come to us for surgical repair or for sexually transmitted diseases that have settled in so badly that they are suffering abscesses inside. These are the horrors that come from gang rape.
And the fistula condition results in social shame as well, doesn't it?
Well, the fistula is a result of gang rape and torture, usually associated with the rape. There will be some sort of abuse, like rape with sticks or guns. And that leaves tissue damage. The wall of the vagina is torn, leaving a leak between the bladder and the vagina, or between the rectum and the vagina. So the woman is also incontinent and permanently incontinent. There's nothing they can do about it. And obviously they stink. They are excluded. They are rejected. Nobody wants them in the family. Very often they're so malnourished. They look like skeletons when they come to us. Some women are put out to live with the goats and the pigs because they just stink so much. And their life is over. They can't go to the market. They can't go to church. They are just social outcasts. Mm. And you see the depression and the sadness in their face when they come. Some as young as 6 years old. The oldest woman who came to us was over 80. And she'd been living with this fistula since the rape when she was 79.
Lynn, do these men responsible for the rape, a lot of them are actually in the military, the Congolese military, is that right?
There are the Congolese military, there are the Hutu militia that did the genocide in Rwanda, there are the Mai Mai nationalists, there's the Tutsi militia, there's the UN forces, the Congolese army. All of these are roaming around our eastern borders.
UN forces?
All of the people carrying arms have been responsible for rape. The UN forces have immediately disciplined their troops, so it is rare amongst the UN troops. But
they're still being guilty of it.
Every army in that region, they've been found responsible for rapes.
What kind of justice is being brought down on these people? Are any of them being caught?
Out of how many hundreds of thousands of rapes in North Kivu, only 6 convictions have actually happened. The problem is the law is such that it requires medical evidence of rape. And it requires identification. You have to catch the people responsible. If the people responsible are the militia, you're not going to get hold of them. You find... Where would you apprehend them?
Well, I guess
who's going to go after them?
There'd be fear of recrimination as well.
There is also terrible fear of anyone who gives evidence. On one occasion, there was a rape in the town of Goma of a young woman who was in the university. And she came to our hospital, the specialist and the doctors who saw her sewed her up and took her testimony. And then she wanted to bring evidence against these people because they were local army officers and they were identified. Then there were serious threats against her, against our doctor, and against the nurses who were giving testimony. And the girl was so frightened she dropped the case. Very often, even when someone is arrested and the rest of the group are not arrested, then they will intimidate the family. We've had to move people who have brought a complaint. We had to move them to other villages because there's so much fear of reprisals. The police system can't offer protection. The justice system is just in total collapse. There's nobody who's paid. So anyone who pays to get out of jail or to have their conviction quashed, they just pay. And the women have no redress. They have no redress in law.
Lynn, how do you cope with all of this? I mean, you personally, seeing this day after day, hearing about it, standing up and championing the cause of these victims, etc. How do you feel?
Most often, I feel anger. But sometimes you have to understand emotion as what will move you to action. there are many emotions that come through you, and I think God uses any emotion that is useful. Anger when you want to redress an injustice. Compassion when you have to just day after day look after these women. Joy when you see them healed. And I think mostly it's that. It's the joy of seeing these women come back to life. It's absolutely what you see in Isaiah 61, beauty for ashes. It's the transformation of these lovely women when they come in so depressed, so filthy and so malnourished. And you see them just blossom before your eyes. It's like Australia after the drought. Now you're getting rain. Everything's green again. It's the same sort of thing when God pours his love onto these people and they just come back to life. There's a lot of hope, a lot of joy. If you come to the hospital, you don't get the impression that here's a lot of miserable people sitting around. It's absolutely the opposite. There's a lot of laughter, a lot of fun.
And what can you put that down to?
It's the solidarity of women. You see other people who've had the problem and who've got over it. So much love and compassion from the women counselors. And they pray. They pray a lot with the women. And people realize that God is on their side. God is really on their
when
side.
When nobody else is.
Right.
When nobody else is. Their torturers aren't. Even their families aren't. Certainly the authorities aren't. God is. How would your program be different if you didn't have the faith aspect? If you didn't have the committed Christian aspect there?
I don't think I'd want to be involved. I've seen other programs that run from a very professional point of view. They say, well, women want to kill their babies. Well, women commit suicide. Only on one occasion have I ever seen any girl who wanted to commit suicide. A healing ministry is a ministry from God, and God is in it. Just a program for women victims of sexual violence doesn't meet the needs of people.
Doesn't go deep enough.
Doesn't go deep, no.
Lynn Lucy is our guest on Open House. Well, Lynn, you've mentioned this documentary called Lumo, and it's now available in Australia. Tell me about Lumo's story, where she starts, where she ends up.
Yeah, people have said, I don't want to go and see a film on sexual violence in Congo. I couldn't stand it. That's just not the case. This is a story of one girl. I look at Lumo and the way she behaves. I think, this is my daughter. And this is the way you will see her. You'll see her as your daughter, your sister. She was 20 when this attack happened. She and her friend were coming back from the market. She was selling goods in the market in Masisi, going back to Nyabiondo. And she and her friend were caught by rebels and taken off into the forest and very badly abused, and then thrown on the side of the road and left for dead. She, unfortunately, was badly torn. Her family couldn't cope with her. They did try to help. It was when she went to a traditional healer, what we would probably call the witch doctor, that the witch doctor actually said, well, there are women out there looking for people who need help like you. So she was brought down to our hospital. She's not the most cooperative patient. You'll see that in the film. So for several reasons, her surgeries didn't succeed until the fifth surgery. So you see her going through hope. Maybe it succeeded. I don't think it succeeded. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. And then her joy when it's finally successful. Also her joy at going home, but these mixed feelings. What am I going home to? You see also her friends and the gossip and the teasing and the fun they have, the boredom. You see it all. She's a very engaging character. Everybody loves to watch her.
Okay, well, I'll give some details in just a second on where people can arrange a viewing of that Lumo documentary, which I think will help educate so many of us about the situation that's going on in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and also what can be done for these women. There's almost a sense of powerlessness, though, when you are saying that the authorities don't do anything, etc. You are saying this is only a problem that can be helped from outside of the country. What can we do? I mean, what can average people who are listening to this program do to help your cause?
Now, if you talk about democracy, that means the people rule. So in Australia, the people, you rule Australia. You decide what the government's going to do, and you tell the government what you want the government to do, which means that you write to your MP, he has an absolute obligation to answer you. And if you ask him certain questions, he probably won't go find the answers himself, but he'll send an eager beaver out to find the answers. And he'll have to sign the letter, which means he'll have to read the answers. So we're hoping that people who want to get involved in advocacy will get the advocacy letter suggestion off the website or from a CNEC advocacy pack. Then they will make the letter personal and send it off and get the answer back. Now, this makes the MP aware of the problem. And hopefully, if he's got any humanity, or she, they will become concerned and say, I didn't know about this. And so you personally have made your government aware of the problem. And the government, if there's a sufficient critical mass of people asking their MPs about this, then they will have to do something. They will ask the right questions of their foreign policy people.
Even if all of that happens, though, you know, mm-hmm. if pressure is put on by Australia, will it do anything?
We believe in faith and hope and love, right? Faith means, yes, you believe that God can move mountains. He can change things. God will change things. And we hope, and that's not a pious hope that one day things will change. It's hope is what motivates you. If you didn't have any hope, you wouldn't do anything. So we have hope. And this is absolutely an expression of love. It's our duty. So let's do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, sister. I bet you there's a praying church over in the Democratic Republic of Congo that are praying alongside what we could be doing here.
Prayer is absolutely a motor. When you think about what prayer is, it's trying to get the mind of Christ in us. So we want to know, what does God want in this situation? We ask him, what does he want in this situation? We don't have to ask very much because we know he hates this evil that's going on. He hates this cruelty and he wants to bring change, trying to understand things as he does. That will bring change.
Well, you've talked about the joy that you see in some of these women. And, you know, we've talked about some pretty serious things. I want you to end on a story of joy. Can you tell me about one woman that you'll never forget, who that joy will never leave your mind?
Ah, well, that's an easy choice because if you watch the film, there's another woman in the film, Vumilia, and she learns that her sixth surgery has failed. You see her crying. People are trying to comfort her and give her some hope. A little while after that, a journalist came from the Guardian Weekly in England. He was talking to different people. Vumilia just loves to talk. She was talking to the journalist and telling her story. And the journalist asked her what she would do if she was healed. She said, "Oh, I'd just love to open a little shop and sell things." So somebody read this story in the Guardian Weekly, and he phoned me from England. And he said, "I'd really like to help Vumilia set up her shop. What does it cost?" So I told him, and never heard any more about it. I never said anything to anybody because so often people say they're going to do something and then they never do. So we don't want to raise false hopes and expectations. About 5 months after that, I was looking at the bank statement, and there was a transfer into the bank, and it was £500 for Vumilia's shop. I was just so happy. I just jumped up and down and ran outside and found Mama Muliri, and I said, "Hey, look, this money for Vumilia to open a shop." Mama Muliri said, "Shh, shh, don't tell her, because she's in bed now with her seventh surgery. It looks like it's going to succeed. And if you tell her now, she'll be jumping around and it will all come undone."
Okay.
I think this is so typical of the way God shows his love. He knew that this seventh surgery was going to succeed, and he set this up for her. So at the time when she healed, there was this money for her to set up shop. And it's just typical of God's love, isn't it? The way he deals with us.
Yeah, it's trademark character trait of God working that way. Is Absolutely. The shop working all right now?
Oh, yes, she's doing very well. She has a little sewing workshop. She sews for people.
It's beautiful. Lynn Lucy, thank you for your time and Open House tonight. It's been really important to hear from you and very inspirational too.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, I want to give you two really important websites. If you have heard what you've heard and you want to make some action on it, and I hope you do, two websites, healafrica.org. That is Lynn's website for her organization, Heal Africa, healafrica.org. And then a different one, this is a slightly longer one. Grab a piece of paper and a pen and scribble this one down. This is the Australian organization that supports Heal Africa. This is where you can arrange a screening of this LUMO documentary. This is also where you can get resources to be part of the campaign that gets the Democratic Republic of Congo onto the local, national, and then international agenda of our politicians. CNECPI. .com.au CNECPI.com.au.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.